Your smile beams like sunlight on a gull's wing, and the leaves dance and play after you. Take my hand and hold it as you would a flower. Take care with my heart, oh darling, she's made of glass. Your eyes feel like silence resting on me, and the birds cease to sing when you rise. Ride easy, your fairy stallion you have mounted. Take care how you fly, my precious, you might fall down. In the pastel skies of sunset, I have wandered with my eyes and ears and heart strained to the full. I know I tasted the essence in the few days. Take care who you love, my precious, he might not know.
Good morning. This is Sheila, and I'm with my radio partner and friend Tom for Artist Experience. We'd like to remind our listeners that we have an Artist Experience page on Facebook where we put images of the things we're looking at. It's also a place we'd love our listeners to give us ideas and feedback. So please look at it if you can while you're listening. You can stream the program at tacomaradio.org. And also, we put podcasts of this show on my website, SheilaBlake.com, and on ArtAsExperience.com, and anywhere you get your podcasts so that you can listen at any time.
Well, good morning, everyone. As promised today, Sheila and I will take you on a trip to the National Gallery, and we will be talking about an exhibition in the West Building titled The Touch of Color, Pastels at the National Gallery of Art. The exhibition is ongoing until January 26, 2020. So you have plenty of time to go to the National Gallery on the Mall and see it. It's metro accessible, with just about every color line on the metro system, and the museum is free. The museum is free to all. I've got to confess, Sheila, this is your show.
It is.
You have immersed yourself literally and figuratively in pastels for many years. Our listeners don't know, but you almost have to climb over boxes of pastels to get into the heart of your studio to see your lovely pastels, your other paintings, and other media. So, Sheila, I'm going to sit back and relax. And I know how lovely your pastels are, and I know how much of an expert you are in these. So we're going to share about the medium that many of you might not be that familiar with, and in an exhibition titled The Touch of Color, Pastels from the National Gallery of Art.
Well, that's a perfect title for this exhibition, A Touch of Color. It's they're showing pastels the National Gallery from their own collection. And it begins in Italy in the 16th century and then up until the 70s in the U.S. And yet, the whole thing has a lightness to it. That's why it's so nice. It's a touch of color. And it's so different from if there were an exhibit of oil paintings of the same subjects from the same times, they would be much heavier. This is sort of, it has an ephemeral quality to it, the whole show. And the subjects, they're very traditional. So it's really about the pastels, what an artist can do with these pieces of colored chalk. And they hold your interest and mine.
Definitely yours. Well, you know, Sheila, we've talked about so many times on this show, and this is our 81st show, about how much we learn, you know, and this exhibition, you can learn about art history, about new artists that you might have never heard of, about the use of the medium that's been going on for ages. And the exhibition opens right there in the front with this learning about this woman artist from Venice named named Rosalba Carriera, who had a great career as an artist doing pastels from around 1700 to 1757. Well, I've never heard of her. A lady doing pastels at this time in a man's art world was pretty astonishing to me. So, you know, she was so amazing that she took the pastel medium and brought it to other parts of Europe and, you know, shared it with other people. And she must have been quite a lady. And her works in the exhibition, I believe there are three of them, they're amazing. But the portrait of Sir John Reed, Baronet, in the first room is astonishing in his technical prowess and convincing of its illusion as a portrait. Was she inspirational to you at all? Have you known about her?
No, I never heard of her. But I have to say there's some magic quality about pastels and in her portraits because they are... The flesh is so lifelike. Yeah. It's something that pastels can do. There's a certain quality about them that we'll try to talk about. But pastels can mimic the appearance of every texture, metal, satin, flesh especially. And maybe because I'm so ladylike, I've been using pastels for about 40 years.
Brava, brava.
They were considered at this time a ladies' medium. It was partly because they felt that ladies should be occupied and not idle, but that they weren't going to dirty their hands with oil paints. And so, and they even made sets of pastels that were like women's subjects. Like,
interesting.
Yeah, it really is interesting. I know.
Sounds like a marketing thing.
Yeah, it kind of does. Like you want to keep this woman busy and quiet and clean. Give her a set of
and
pastels.
And creative. We forgot about creative.
People are always pointing out to me, oh, you have a smudge of blue on your nose. But pastels are very portable. I can organize them in a carrier and take them outside. Or I could work out of the back of my car, which has a flat sort of tabletop surface when I open up the back. Or I can work in my studio where I have a giant tabletop with thousands of pastels. I never have enough.
So, and I could vouch for that.
Yeah, you can. I know. When people come in my studio, that's what they say. And it's so weird because I want them to look at the work, not the table. They just go, oh, my God. I never was much aware of pastel technique because they're such a natural medium. You can do sort of whatever you want with them. The work I do is as finished as my oil paintings. But a couple of years ago, I was accepted into a painting show that was juried by a wonderful artist, William Bailey. I love his work. And when I called the art center to ask her about shipping my pastel, she said, oh, we didn't realize it was a pastel. This show is only for paintings. Well, I said, but pastels can be used as a drawing medium, which is mostly linear, or as a painting medium, which covers the surface. And even at this time in the 16th century, that was true of pastels. They were considered pastel painting or drawing. And she wouldn't be convinced. It was ridiculous. I had to send another painting in its place. And I never convinced her. Well, maybe I'll send them a podcast of this show because it was a lot of trouble.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, well, yeah, I'm glad you had luck with William Bailey.
Yeah.
He's truly a great artist, and he taught at Yale for many, many years. I think he might be retired now, but he came to my studio when I was a graduate student in Baltimore, and boy, he hated my work. He gave it one look and walked out, so that's my relationship to William Bailey. I show his work a lot in my classroom because it has quite merit. But, you know, I guess I thought that the layering of the chalks in the process is very similar to painting. That's why I see it as a pastel painting, and that's what they call them. And it's also, I was wondering, because in the old days the pastel, which could have been done on paper or on canvas, on gessoed canvas, it could have, and it was put on a stretcher like a painting. So in that sense, it also could have been, in the old days especially, pastels were treated as if they were literally on wood stretchers, like a painting.
Yeah.
So that's another reason they could have been. And they could have been done on gesso, calcium-coated board, which some of the ones in the show actually were, without paper.
Yeah, or on parchment and glued to a canvas. There's lots of ways, but the thing that pastels have is that there's not drying time between the layers, whereas in paintings, especially of that time, they were glazed, and so there was layers and layers, and then you could keep adding. But in pastels, there's no time.
Well, it's immediate.
You just
continue, right?
Yeah, so it's very cool that way. And let's see, what else do I want to talk about here? So pastels are really a medium that's close to my heart.
And oh, they definitely are.
I love to talk about them.
Well, you know, I gathered that the pastel medium was an old medium, and I actually was thinking of like the cave dwellers, and they ground up earth and they kind of blew it onto a sticky surface.
Right.
And so in that sense, it was kind of an earth tone, and you know, they grounded in that. It was a kind of pastel. And I know that the ancients used them also, and we only know like from literary sources. We're not really, really sure exactly how they used it. But what else in history about the pastel? Because it seems to have a legacy.
Yeah, well, pastels were originally, not in the cave paintings, which actually, that's what they are. They're chalk from the earth. You know, the ochres, the charcoal, the siennas.
The red oxide.
The red oxide. Yeah, so they are pastels. But in the 16th century, they were often used for preparatory sketches for larger finished works. And then later in the 18th century, they were used as independent works, especially for portraits, as we talked about. And because of their portability and their relative cleanliness, they were also, as we said, a proper medium for women. And they're much more transportable. So this sort of spread through Europe from Italy through France to Britain quickly. And the pastel makers selected boxes of colors, and they still do this, that are particularly suited, as they think, to flowers, to figures, to landscapes. And so, and now, that's true.
Oh, so you could buy like a box, depending on the subject that you draw. Wow.
Exactly.
They do that with ground pigments as well, actually. And that makes sense because they're kind of distantly related. Well, in the exhibition at the National Gallery, the first few pastel paintings were by two wonderful Italian artists, Jacopo Bassano and Federico Barocchi. And these guys were amazing artists in their own right. And the looseness of the pastel in the study of the mocking of Christ, it's almost a gestural drawing.
Yeah.
And he creates it into a large-scale painting in the 16th century. And the head of the bearded man by Barocchi is a masterpiece.
Yes.
And it's a very proud, the National Gallery is very proud owners of that of that drawing. It's a very odd view, a foreshortened view of a man's head. He's got a reddish beard. And they show in the on the label where it appears in his painting. I forget exactly the subject, but that study went into a final oil painting. And I think the entree into the show gives us the variety of kinds of marks you can make. And this side, loose and gestural quality with the pastels. Mm-hmm. You know, you could be very stiff with them, but you can also be very, very loose. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, amazing. But what exactly is like the modern pastel now? Tell me a little what that is, because it's not really just ground pigment.
Well, it almost is. It's made of ground pigment and then a filler like chalk. And then a binder like gum arabic, and they're rolled to be in a shape, and then they're dried, and that's it. They're very immediate, and they can be used, as we were saying, on paper or on parchment like a skin, or on paper glued to canvas. They're incredibly versatile, and they can be used to draw in a linear way or cover the whole paper. And if they are used, they can, you know, to cover the paper, they can have a very opaque, velvety coating, or they could be used any way in between, letting the paper show through or making the paper be a major part of the work, more like a drawing. And if the paper has a deep tooth, you know, like the texture of the paper, the tooth can be scumbled over so that the paper shows through. And if the, you know, and if the, you can do this with layers. And just as oil painters would tone their canvases often, like Cezanne, you know, with the, tone them before they started painting with like a pale sienna or an umber. Pastel painters often worked on tone paper, and it's a lovely effect. And you can buy paper now with a variety of muted colors, and then you work over the paper so that some of the paper shines through. In oil painting, artists discovered that an underpainting of green will bring out the delicate flesh tones. And pastel painters would use the tone paper in the same way. And you can see this all through the exhibit. Mary Cassatt, early in her career, she noticed some Edgar Degas pastels in a gallery, and she sought them out. And after a while, they began to work together. And they worked together for 10 years. And she would work on a sort of muted pinky beige paper to bring life to the blues and the greens and the brighter pinks. And as we talked about Whistler maybe a month ago, he would work on a brown paper, which he touched with black in just a few strokes of delicate color. And doing this, he could bring so much. It's like the paper becomes a whole part of the drawing when it's right. toned.
Look, let's go back a little, because for our listeners, how can we define scumbling? Because that's always a difficult word that you used before. I think it means two different things in painting and in drawing. But for our listeners, how would we like define scumbling, and what you would do that with the pastels?
Well, when you do it with, say, in watercolors, what you do is you make a very dry brush. You get the water out of the brush just enough to keep some of the pigment, some of the paint on the brush. And then you lightly move it over the surface so that it's picked up on the high parts of the textured paper, and the low parts are still paper. But in pastel, you don't need to even do that. You just lightly cover the paper, or you lightly pull the pastel over the paper so that some of the original paper is showing through.
Ah, gotcha. You
know? So I wanted to tell this thing. I had a show once in New Mexico of my still lifes, and I love that quality where there's some of the paper shining through, because you're aware of both things at once. You're aware of the illusion of the, you know, of the drawing the space and the light. And you also can see enough of the paper that you're aware that it's, oh, it's just pastel on paper. So you're getting both things at once, the illusion and then also the reality of what it really is.
Oh, there was a lot of examples in the show.
There were. So when I had this exhibit, this guy came over to me and he said, you know, you can see these white dots and you ought to cover them up. And I said, no. And I explained to him, I said, I love it both ways. This way you can see that it's chalk on paper and you can also see the illusion. And he said, you know, you can Photoshop that out.
Oh, no. Oh, goodness gracious. Well, I don't know if James McNeil Abbott Whistler would, James Abbott McNeil Whistler would enjoy that comment either. Well, we talked about Whistler, as Sheila said, in his watercolors a few months ago, and there were some small, lovely pastels in that show, and they were also in this show. And that's an example. There was a lot of paper coming through his sketch.
Yes.
And there was a kind of a brown, almost cardboard paper. And they were very gestural and very strong drawings. And one of them was of St. George Maggiore from Venice, the landscape of the Church of St. George Major in Venice. And it was a beautiful little study. And also, the you mentioned Edgar Degas, and there was four fabulous small pastels.
Yes.
But he, you know his work. I mean, the famous ballerina sculptures, the famous ballerina paintings, and here these studies of the theater, the ballet at the bar, and they were wonderful, and they're very intimate. And that's the other thing. You could go really small and tight with those pastels. And his ballet dancer from 1880. This is something where I'm convinced that he used the camera, but he also was looking at Japanese art. The ballerinas are not really on the floor. They're like hovering.
That is so smart of you.
They're hovering and floating on the page, and it gives them that sense of lightness, right? That's what ballerinas do. They kind of float across the stage, right?
Yeah.
And he did such an amazing job on that. There's no cast shadows. They're like spirits in tutus. You know, it's like, it was just, there were, I stood in front of those four little paintings and they were keepers. And you mentioned Mary Cassatt. Mary Cassatt was an American living in Paris, and she was a devotee and a friend of Edgar Degas, as Sheila mentioned. But her work, The Black Hat, which we have actually seen before in another exhibition, it's the way she uses the blue chalks on this red, pale, pinkish flesh. She puts the blue into the face. And humans, we have a green-blue tinge. Most people might not know that when you do a portrait. You have to keep those blues and greens alive and to make it believable. And she definitely does that. Not to mention this black hat. It's hard to get, you know, form on a black hat, and she did a really, really good job. Well, there's a lot of well-known artists in the show, but Sheila, I've got to talk about this. This is really important since I've been teaching drawing for 40 years. You have to really know how to draw to do pastels, don't you?
Well, if you're doing anything that's, you know, has a illusion of reality, you do. But I wanted to go back one thing to Degas. Degas was totally experimental with pastels. He would go over and over. So a lot of times that lightness, you know, the one you were just describing, but like there's a drawing in the Phillips collection, it's big, it's under glass, it's, you don't even know where he began with this drawing. It has gone over and over, and obviously he would use fixative on the drawing and then keep drawing over it, just searching and searching until he finally got what he wanted. It's very experimental.
Well, yeah, I mean, he actually, in the show, the pastel was over a monotype. So he took prints. And then he put pastels over the print.
Now that's
not very traditional. Mm-hmm. So he was working on top of another art form, which, again, very progressive.
Yeah.
And it kind of, like, if you had a really bad print, you could make it better
by
putting some nice colors of pastel on top.
Well, to me, pastels just are beautiful in themselves. You look at a box of pastels, they're gorgeous. And just on the paper, they're just a beautiful medium. But if you're working on a composition and you go too far and muddy it up, You can just spray the whole thing with fixative, and then you have a whole new ball game because you can go over all of it. Just
work
like
up, rework it,
right?
Apply the chalk on top,
right? So, but you do have to watch it with a fixative because it can darken the color and can take the life away. It can take its luminous quality away, and so it's. It's very important about the fixative. I had a terrible thing happen to me once where I was, I mean, it seems funny now, but it was actually terrible, is that I was at my son's house and I was working, just finishing up a drawing that I was giving to him. And I was just had it perfect. And so I went upstairs to his desk and I saw a can of fixative, you know, Krylon fixative. So I got it up and I sprayed it.
Oh, no,
I sprayed it over the thing. And the thing is, when you use fixative, for this very momentary thing, you're wetting basically the pastel. And so it darkens, but then it immediately lightens again. And I kept waiting for it to lighten and it didn't lighten. And I picked up the can and I looked and it was fixative for photographs. And the can was exactly the same except
this
one.
Did you laminate the pastel with the layers?
Oh my God. I really went into a panic attack. I really did. I didn't know what to do. And so I just got to work and I worked and I worked and I worked and I worked and I got the pastel back to where I want it to be.
Well, Sheila, I'm going to stop you in your tracks here because, you know, we have a script here and it says that you said pastels were easy and you haven't admitted to that yet on the air. So I want to get you in a hold here. Since I believe you have to have good drawing skills, and for especially for young artists and our young listeners, you've really got to know, because how light hits an object with pastels is going to kind of get you to choose which colors you're going to apply to create the form.
Well, that is true. That's
so you have
absolutely
to have a little. You have to have a little knowledge of how light hits an object, and how reflective surfaces are. So you need a bit of color theory, and color theory is not easy. And you also have to know the principles of layering, as you mentioned the word scumbling. I mean, there's a layering kind of process to the pastels. Of course, you just give and take there, but then you have to know about modeling lines, because if you use line. To create the form of, let's say, a pear, you've got to know how to turn that pear in space. And then there's the values, the shades, the color intensities, the saturation, and the harmonies. So there's a lot to really know there. And then, of course, you have the variety of papers. So I don't know how easy that is. I have done pastel, Sheila, and some of which I'm proud of, and they're in several collections, but most of which I'm not. Because, you know, they haven't been the easiest thing to conquer for me.
It's funny that, because for me, it's like, I don't know when I picked up some pastels and I just went, oh, this is great. This is easy. But I have to say, Tom, the thing you're talking about is really so fundamental. And it's like, I know people hear color theory. Bite the bullet. Learn how color works. Some color theory, then you it's not a handicap, then it's your tool, and the same with line and form. Learn it.
Doubt about it. Let me ask you about the permanence, though.
Oh, yeah. Because
in the introduction to the exhibition, there was a big wall panel, and that was one of the issues about, you know, very sensitive to light. How does it work after 300 years? Now, some of these paintings were actually very beautiful and they were 300 years old, but and they looked like the color was pretty good. But I mean, the paper decaying, I mean, under the pastel.
Right.
So, I mean, that to me would be a kind of a artist's nightmare in some ways. And like you said, the spray could work. So what about that? Because I think that's for some artists now in the environmental sense, artists are more concerned. How would you feel about that in the permanence of the pastel for the future, let's say?
Well, what I would say is use as little fixative as possible, but the only way really to preserve pastels is to seal them with glass and something underneath, so that in framing them or in You know, you have to put a plate of glass over the pastel with a mat between so that the pastels can't be touching the mat or they're
or
going
the glass,
or
right.
the glass
right.
and then you have to seal it with tape around, otherwise moisture gets in and then it can lead to mold, and the conservators have a problem on their hands, which they know how to work with. But one of the conservators of this show actually talked about using a one-haired brush and moving the particles of pastel onto the offending whatever it is, you know, like a crack in the pastels, like a line that shouldn't be there, or some mold, and just gently moving it enough of the pastel to cover the problem. And sometimes you can't quite cover it, but the pastel never really adheres to the surface. And so over time, the little flakes of pastel will fall, and they do, and they'll fall onto the mat. And so it's a good idea to leave a space between the mat and the pastel so that when the flakes fall, they fall down between the drawing and the mat. It's tricky. I mean,
I don't want to make light of this, but mm-hmm. I mean, I was thinking if an artist has a cold and they sneeze on that pastel, the whole thing
is
going to go up in a puff of chalk. You have to be so aware of that.
Yeah.
But Sheila, there's a lot of different kinds of pastels. Why don't mm-hmm. you share with our listeners that there are so many different kinds?
Well, there are many different kinds, and each pastel, each manufacturer, their pastels will have a certain quality, and the consistency of the pastel, the color of the pastels. I would say that Sennelier is a wonderful company. They were around for Cézanne. You can still go to the Sennelier store in Paris, which I haven't been, but I've heard about it. And their brand is probably, they have 525 colors, which don't include their iridescent colors. And they are between white, the most smallest tint on white, to the darkest pure pigment, and everything in between. So for that 525 colors, you can get pretty much a basic set.
Well, do you need a gazillion colors to make a nice pastel painting? Because, I mean, that's not cheap either.
No, it depends who you are.
Now we're talking.
And it also is, somehow when you're working, you're thinking the color you need. And if you're thinking of having a set of, say, 12 colors and blending them, that doesn't really trigger in your mind when you're looking at a large amount of pastel. And you can look down and you say, oh, that's the color I need. So it triggers your color imagination to be able to look at a lot of colors. You may not need to use them all, but they're there for your reference.
I got it. But now let's say, I mean, I teach drawing too, which is color. How about the students buy new pastels?
Yeah.
So are they okay?
Yeah, they're fine. The thing with new pastels is they're hard, so you can make a nice cut line. Like I use them, and I use them a lot for the linear quality. If I want some nice sharp line.
Edges.
And you can break them and get a new edge. The thing about them is that they do oxidize. Just like if you're using a Conti pencil.
Right.
That richness of color, unless the pastel is sealed, it will oxidize over time, and then you can get that back by working it back into the pastel, like with a rubber smudger or something. There's right. lots of little tools out
wow.
there.
Well, if you just joined us at the Artist Experience Radio Show, Sheila and I are talking about one of our favorite mediums, which is pastel. And we're also talking about a wonderful exhibition at the National Gallery of Art on the Mall. And we're going to be taking a station break now. So let's listen in, and we'll see you in a little bit.
Welcome back. You're listening to WOWD LP Tacoma Park, the Artist's Experience radio show.
Well, the work in the exhibition contained a lot of landscapes, and I know that's one of your favorite genres, Sheila, and they jumped out at me because I was wondering, I mean, the challenges of taking these landscapes taking these pastels into the landscape and doing them plein air outside in the elements. Have you done that, and how do you feel about that, you know, or you take them to the studio and do them?
Well, both. But when I begin a painting, when I do preparation for painting, I usually do charcoal drawings first to sort of feel out the composition. And then I take pastels outside, and I'll be standing out on the street, you know.
Sounds good.
And people come by, and they just love to come and look. And I'm the same way. I love to look at what people are doing, but this sort of gets in the way. And sometimes people will send their kids out to say, ask her what she's doing. And so, but I do love to use pastels outside because somehow the way that pastel can work on the paper, especially when we were talking about scumbling and stuff, can mimic leaves and clouds and surfaces more than oil paint. So when I start the painting, I have to figure out how to translate those little marks on the paper into real brush strokes that make leaves and stuff or whatever it is I'm making.
I guess it's a little tough to transport them, right? I mean,
I have my ways, you know. Yeah, I have a portable thing that I can arrange the pastels in and bring a table and an easel. But
the finished drawing, though, or the study, it could be tough, too. You have to be very careful.
Oh, you do have to be very careful. Don't brush against anything or even breathe too hard, really. But there's an American painter, Wolf Kahn. Some of you may know about him. Unfortunately, he's not in the show. And his work doesn't really fit into a lot of sort of modern genres of painting. And he does luminous, beautiful pastel landscapes. They're usually just three planes, like a foreground, trees and sky, and then, you know, foreground, trees and sky, and then whatever is behind that. And his colors are so reactive and so delicate that he had a set of pastels that was originally developed to meet his needs. And he sort of uses these pastels like they're mostly finely ground pumice, and they plow into the paper. So he had a special paper manufactured that has sort of fibers woven into the paper so that they can take many layers of pastel, much more than traditional pastel papers. And so you can make layers and layers, and the pastel does cling much better to the paper, and the artist can get rich, deep color, and the pastel won't flake off too easily. So pastels have always been an experimental medium. You can use brush. You can use a smudger, like a paper smudger or a leather smudger. And so... there's just so much you can do with it. You can put water into pastel. And
wow, that must be interesting.
Yeah, and really like paint with a pastel. Or you can push the pastels over. Or you can use your fingers. I use a lot. I do a lot with my fingers. I don't even think about it. Just put something down, smudge it with my finger. It works out really well.
Well, in the exhibition, you know, because you're so... tuned to landscape work. One of my all-time favorite French artists is Jean-François Millet, and he was from the Barbizon school in the mid-19th century. He has two lovely, playful landscapes. One of them, which is a cute title, Calling Home of the Cows, and it's sort of romantic and bucolic, and they're lovely little pastel paintings. Well, they're not actually so little, but they're really lovely gems in the show. And then, of course, the very famous Paul Huet from 1845, A Meadow at Sunset. This is truly an impressionist work. And there were some impressions. You figured the impressionists would be big on pastels. There were only a few in the show. There was a Renoir, I think, and there was a Monet. And what about Monet? I was surprised there was only one because he'd done many.
Exactly. They sort of said in the text for the show, they said Monet used pastels sporadically, but I have a huge book of Monet pastels, and he worked on brown paper like the color of a paper bag. And he could capture the light so beautifully, you know, and because of this brown color underneath. But they work very beautifully with his paintings, the pastels do. There's really not a real division, but I was surprised that there is only one pastel of Waterloo Bridge, and it's very faint. You know, when you pay attention to it, you can see what he was doing, but if you don't pay attention, it's easy to walk right by it.
Yeah, it's not it doesn't knock you over, that little pastel, but it is a good work, and if they put it in the corner too, which doesn't make it doesn't help it. But what I was going to say is, now how about the medium being used in still life? Because there were some still lifes in the show. Do you have a preference on that? Do you prefer the still life? Because a lot of your big pastels are really still lifes.
Right, they are. They are. Well, you know, it's a pleasure to work on still lifes because when you're outside and with pastels doing landscapes, the light is changing all the time. You have to get down very quickly what you want because in, you know, half an hour, the shadows are being different. The,
right.
You know, where the light is coming from, the direction of the light is different. And so they're very good for me to do. And but I always bring them back in my studio, even the landscapes, and keep working on them to sort of bring them back together. But the still lifes are just a pleasure because...
Well, you love these all these different textures. You love printed materials, fabrics. There's metals you work with, wood. And, you know, I'm the proud owner of some beautiful pastel, and I look at those oranges. They're succulent and beautiful every day. And so is it the variety of things that you can put into your composition?
I have so much control. I can just say, oh, I want to draw this and this and this and put them all together. And also I have a directional light in my studio so that the light I can, you know, it's a theatrical light. I might have mentioned it before, but it casts a light on the still life. So that doesn't change. And there's no bugs. And there's no traffic. And there's no friendly people coming right up behind me.
So you have the solitude. This
so
is Sheila
solitude.
And solitude
like
still life
is,
painting.
Right. This is when I relax.
Yeah, very yes. good. Well, you know, in the show, there was only a few still lives. But I've always been a fan. I mean, I have no idea why this is of that those dead game pinned to a wall. I don't know why I enjoy looking at those paintings, but I've never pulled a trigger in my life. I've never hunted. But there's something about the different kinds of animals that they put on a wall and they draw. And this French artist, Antoine Bergeon, has these two wonderful hunting trophies of a mallet and a hare, and they're more than life-size. They're quite big, and they're absolutely amazing. And here's where the pastels, and I was mentioning textures for that reason with your work, the feathers, the fur,
yeah.
They're all so real, and you can get them with these dashes of color.
Yes.
And like the, you know, the like the how like a pheasant or a bird or a mallet has that like almost it's phosphorescent kind of greens and blues
right.
in their heads and stuff like that in their feathers. And there was so real in this painting. And this was just with chalk.
Mm-hmm.
So you got the textures really amazing. He got the textures really amazingly. And Sheila, I wanted to ask you about the use of pastels in illustration, because there was a couple of illustrations
yeah.
in the show. One which I thought was amazing was George Luke's The Bread Line.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the darkest.
Yes.
Of course, young children waiting for bread during the Great Depression.
Yeah.
And Everett Shinn's was much more kind of a cityscape. I mean, do you think it's an appropriate medium for illustration as well?
Yeah, why not? I mean, they're, as we said, they're much more immediate. There's no drying time. You can just put down what you want. And plus that, you can... Because of the linear quality, you can quickly do a gesture or a line that with you wouldn't really do this like with other mediums like gouache. They're much more take a lot more work.
Yeah, they're a little
yeah.
more
more
effort in the mm-hmm. schlepping of stuff and other things.
Yeah.
Well, the last room in the exhibition, Sheila, what'd you think? There was the end of the 19th century and 20th century use of pastel. Did any jump out at you?
Well, I want to talk about something that's missing from this show. Of course, I mean, this is their collection, so they don't have everything in their collection. But Sean Scully, who's a contemporary painter, he does the most wonderful work with pastels, and he must use up tons of pastels, but his work is often blocks of color, and the colors that he chooses and the richness, the opacity of the pastel Oh, my God. They're fabulous.
They're large, aren't they?
They're big. They're really big. So I had to give him, as we say, a shout out because they're very wonderful.
Well, in the last room, mm-hmm. Sheila, I mean, the masterpiece by William Merritt Chase, The Study mm-hmm. of Flesh, Color, and Gold from 1888, we've seen this actually at the Phillips in the painting version, but yeah. It's a profound statement about the back of a woman, and all you mm-hmm. see is the back of a woman and a hair in an Asian garment at her waist against the gold screen. The subtlety mm-hmm. of the medium is really that shines there.
Yeah.
And then we started the show talking about women artists, and I think we should be appropriate to end the show in the 20th century with women artists. And the Katakovitz, the great German artist who did a self-portrait of a young woman from 1900. She's so young and so well drawn. Mm. I mean, that woman could draw like mm-hmm. nobody's business. And it was an aggressive use of pastels and very vivacious. To me, that was the wow in the last room.
Yeah,
seeing Katakovitz in that. And what about Janet Fish? Wasn't that the funnest, if there's
it
a word?
Was, it
the
was
funnest
the funnest one. Because Janet Fish is really known for her paintings of like glitter. Everything she has, glass shining.
Kitschy
glitter. I mean, it's almost tiresome, the amount of glitter in a painting. But this particular pastel painting is pears in cellophane wrapping, just the way you would get them off the shelf in the grocery store. And the way she did the saran wrap,
the cellophane,
the cellophane, just with a few strokes of white paint that is just catching the light, and it gives the illusion, beautiful illusion of cellophane. And that's when it's very wonderful, because you see it's just a few strokes of white paint.
No, at the pastel, you
of
mean.
Pastel. I'm
right.
sorry.
Yeah.
Right. And then with the pears underneath, but the illusion of cellophane is terrific. It really is.
Yeah, that's a great piece to end the show with. Well, we've been talking with Sheila about one of her favorite mediums, pastel, which is a painting medium and a drawing medium. And you can see the exhibition titled The Touch of Color, Pastels from the National Gallery. And it's an intimate look at the medium of pastels from a historical point of view. And there's nice displays on techniques, methods, and materials. I thought they did a good job on that, Sheila.
Mm-hmm.
And there are about 56 works in the show, so it's a very doable for an afternoon. And it's a very sensual and beautiful medium. Sheila, I've got to thank you for sharing your expertise on this, and we should thank Bobby as well for his expertise with us in the studio. But we hope you've enjoyed the show. And Sheila, tell us about our upcoming show.
Okay, I will. But I have to say that you get a chance in this show in a glass case to see Mary Cassatt's original pastel set.
That's right.
And so there it is. There they are. I think she gave this set to her niece, and it was kept intact. So I just had to say that. And now for the next show, we have a show coming up on art openings and art premieres, because when the artists go wait for the crowd to show up and they see the efforts of their work and they schmooze with wine and cheese and all this stuff. Well, Tom and I went to one of those openings. So we're going to definitely do a show on openings. But this time, we're going back to the National Gallery.
Yeah, for next time, we're going to go see Verrocchio.
Right.
We're going back to Italy in the Renaissance. We haven't gone to Italy in the Renaissance, and we're going to be doing that show. Well, stay tuned to our next exciting program with Bobby Hill right here at This Music. And Bobby shares his incredible knowledge. It's always a great show from 10 to 1 p.m. Avant-Garde Jazz is right here. Experience art and the visual in everything you do. And thanks for listening. We'll see you in 2 weeks.